Hi, today is September 25, 2022. This is Mobius Podcast 423. I'm Todd Agassawart, my good friend Westfall, and back after a one-week hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to Sven Johansson for joining us for Podcast 422 for our, our Apple Announcements podcast.
Yes, talking about, you know, Apple telling all of us that we were going to die if we didn't buy their products.
Yeah, the apocalyptic announcement. That was quite the thing. But anyway,
well, I still say I suspect it was 45 minutes of content that had to fill 90 minutes. And that was just the, you know, this was scheduled in advance, and those product teams, and they all just spontaneously came up with, hey, why don't we talk about how our product can save people's lives?
Yeah.
Yeah, no one else is going to do that.
Anyway, I want to start off with some Google stuff, though, so while John is keeping himself otherwise occupied, I'll ramble on about a few things I've noticed about my Chromebooks.
I am knitting for those that are curious. I have a project that needs to get done by December, so what we do. I can't do this in meetings as easily when it's a big project. In meetings, it's really interesting to me that it's socially acceptable to knit. It's one of the few things that nobody, you know, if you're playing on your phone, people get very offended. But
right.
If you pull out knitting, people just go, oh, that's something people do.
Oh, you know, I've never actually seen anybody knit during a meeting, but I have seen people get upset at me typing at a notebook about 25, 30 years ago, which I thought was stupid. I said, have you seen my handwriting? This is a far more effective way for me to keep notes.
Well, I had a student just this week tell me that she realized that she owned an iPad and could use that to take notes in my class. It was a revelation to her. Because and it's a class that is more of a lecture-heavy class than
okay.
I typically do. So I actually do provide the PowerPoint slides as handouts electronically that they can download. And most of my students are still trying to write the slides instead of downloading them in advance and making notes on the side.
Right.
So she told me, I realized I could use my iPad and just mark up the notes directly on there. And I thought, yeah, I would have hoped you would have realized that years ago, but better late than never.
True. And I laugh, but you know, there are things I have discovered, quote unquote, you know, late in life, and I go, why didn't I know this, you know, 30-40 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, okay, so something I did notice a couple last couple of months I have noticed that my Chromebooks have become a lot more useful.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it is because of the recent Chrome OS 105 update that came out in August, I want to say, maybe July. But some of it is just stuff that escaped my notice or crept up on me slowly. So I'll actually start with one that crept up on me slowly, and that's printers. So back in at the end of 2020, at the height of the pandemic, Google decided, you know what? This Google cloud printing thing, yeah, you really don't need it. And so they turned it off. And that was how I printed from all of my
mm-hmm.
Chromebooks. And so I was kind of, what's the word?
Annoyed.
Bereft.
Yeah. Infuriated. Angered. Freaked out.
And for the longest time, for months and months and months, I just couldn't print. You know, I tried that, like, I followed the instructions. And they provided instructions. Followed the instructions, and it just wouldn't print. But one day, maybe about a year ago, I noticed, hey, I can print now. I have no idea what I did differently. I would try it like once a month, right? I don't need to print a lot, so it wasn't a big deal. But about once a month, I would like, let's see if I can print now. And you know, I'd fuss with a few things maybe. But I don't remember fussing with anything in particular. And printing started, so I was really happy because it really solved a lot of, it didn't solve any problems, but it made things more convenient. So that was great. Okay, the other thing I want to point out that's not, kind of newish, is that I can't remember when, maybe about a year ago, on older Chromebooks, there is a key. Let's see. I think it replaces the caps lock. I don't think Chromebooks have a caps lock. It replaces the caps lock key and had a magnifying glass, which is sort of the universal icon for search. Which is weird, right? Because in a real world, there are very few things you search for with a magnifying glass, but anyway.
That is true, unless you're Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
Then maybe you do.
Right. But anyway, About a year ago, I think they renamed it from the search key or Google key or something like that to, they decided to call it the everything button or everything key. Even though it was, you know, the keyboard had
not everything.
Yeah.
It wasn't that the keyboard became just one key. And so that would literally be an everything key.
Yeah. That's kind of Steve Jobs' dream, you know.
Morse code. We just all go to that for communication.
Now that would be interesting. But, I recently bought my fifth Chromebook. I bought a Lenovo Chromebook Duet 5, which is a detachable Chromebook with a physical keyboard. And I noticed that the Everything key has a different icon on it now. Instead of a magnifying glass, it has a button-like icon with a solid-filled circle and a thin outer ring, which, you know, looks kind of like a button. And I noticed that on the Chromebook lower left, the search button, and I can't remember what it looked like before, but it's the same symbol. So, you know, it's basically you can search either from the bottom left, or you can, which has a little text box you can type in, or you can press the everything key and basically it pops up that search. And you can search for apps and files and whatever. It's great. It's actually quite useful. And I don't miss not having a caps lock, by the way. It's not something I use a lot.
That is, as you were saying that, I was trying to remember the last time I've used caps lock.
When you're yelling at somebody in a text message.
Yeah, maybe that's it. And even then, I do it so infrequently, I probably just hold shift. But it is very interesting now that I think about it that I have not, I don't know if I've ever been a regular caps lock user. Maybe we don't need it anymore.
Yeah. I think in the old days, some things were, in typewriter days, physical typewriter days, I think people used a caps lock to fill out certain kinds of forms in all caps.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and maybe look at like archival data to see people filling out.
Well, I've looked at, yeah, you're right. I think it was more common to fill out, you know, triplicate forms or forms with, you know, in all caps just to avoid ambiguity of what letter you were typing.
Yes.
You know, L's and I's and those sorts of things. So I can sort of see an argument for it there. But once we went into the true type font era, you know, 30 years ago, maybe it wasn't as useful.
Hey, I was at the Comdex when Bill Gates introduced TrueType.
Mm.
Yeah, that was exciting.
But you weren't at the one where he crashed Windows 98 with a scanner. Oh, you were at that
one too? I was at that one too. I went to Comdex for, I won't say many years, but from 93 through 2001, maybe, 2001, that was 9/11, didn't have one that year. Till 2000, I think, I went every year. But in any case, yes, so that was TrueType. That was quite exciting at the time, a scalable font.
Just the idea of what you see is what you get was a crazy era shift, I think, that people don't realize.
It was. There's so many things in the 1990s that, you know, we kind of either take for granted or has disappeared and we've forgotten, but were quite exciting back then.
Oh, yeah. And they were. That was why I say to now that most of the product launches we see are so anticlimactic, because I think about, you know, back then it was a major thing. You know, think about smartphones in the early 2000s.
Oh, yeah.
One year it would be Bluetooth, and the next year it would be Wi-Fi, and 2 years later it was GPS. These are all things that today we take for granted, but it was crazy when they first showed up in smartphones.
And not as crazy. Well, I don't know if it's crazy. It's crazy now to think about it, but I remember there were Internet Explorer 4 launch parties, and people stood in line at midnight to get T-shirts. I think somebody sent me one, so I didn't have to stand in line. But I wonder where it is now, come to think of it. It's a collector's item.
The only midnight launch I ever went to was Windows 95.
Oh,
that was a good midnight launch.
Did I do that one? No, I did not. So at any rate, so the search, the everything button or everything key is, you know, has a different icon, and it's super useful if you're a Chromebook user, which I know you're not, John.
But, well, you keep talking about them in such glowing terms that maybe someday.
Yeah. Maybe the nice thing about it, by the way, John, is Chromebooks on the low end or even the mid-range are so inexpensive. It is cheaper to buy a new Chromebook than it is to buy an Apple Watch, for example, you know, or even an AirPod. The new AirPods cost more than many of the low-end Chromebooks. So you know, it's very reasonably priced for budget-minded people like myself to at least try. And the mid-range ones, which is the one, the models I tend to buy, you know, are still really inexpensive. In fact, a Duet 5 that I recently bought, I think it's considered a mid-range. And I got it on Amazon Prime Day for, I want to say $325 or something like that, which is, you know, a really good price, I think, for what's turned out to be a pretty decent tool. Mm-hmm. Oh, and we can talk about tools later. But at any rate, so other things I want to note, a couple of new things that happened, I think, this year, at least most of this list, is that a number of built-in apps have shown up in Chrome OS, you know, Chromebooks, that are super handy and give you an actual advantage over an unadorned MacBook or Windows PC. So starting off with, you know, at work, I need to deal with PDF forms all the time, but at home, not so much really, you know. I don't know about you, John, but for work, yes, PDFs are everywhere. At home, not so much. But recently,
I might be concerned if you, living with just your wife and a bunny rabbit, are using a lot of forms in PDF. That might actually be more disconcerting if you told me you used PDFs at home just as much as you use them at work.
So, but of late, I have had to fill out a bunch of PDFs because, I don't know, because people don't know how to make fillable forms, basically. Fillable PDFs are easy. That's not an issue anywhere. But if somebody hands you a static PDF that's not a fillable form until you fill it out and send it to us, it's like, now what, right? On Windows, you need like Acrobat Pro or something. Mm-hmm. On the Mac, you can kind of use Preview to annotate it, but everything is in red, so because it's annotation. You know, and I'm not sure.
You can change the font.
Can you change the color?
Yep, you can change color and font.
But at any rate, I had problems with aiming stuff and all that. I got to ask you how to change the font color in macOS. But at any rate, Gallery, which is normally the photo viewer for Chrome OS, Gallery can now edit PDFs. And in fact, I used it the other day because I had to edit some PDFs for various things that's happening. And it was a good experience. You know, it worked exactly the way you expected it to. You could sign it. Not sign it. It doesn't have a Adobe Sign portion. Although if the person who sent it had sent it through Adobe Sign or something, it would have been easier. But it let me edit it. You know, add in my address and name and, you know, all those kind of things in the field. And I couldn't solve the signature part because, as I said, they didn't use an e-signature service. So I did have to print it. But at least it didn't have my illegible handwriting on the rest of the form. The only legible thing on the form was my actual signature. So, and then I, you know, rescanned it and sent it back to the person. But at any rate, so Gallery can edit PDFs now. I think that's new as of this summer. Also, I don't know when this happened, but I needed to scan stuff. And normally, again, I've been doing this on a Mac normally. So, you know, I pop open my MacBook and scan and I'm all done. But I thought, I wonder if my Chromebook could do it. Never tried it. So I checked into it and it says, yeah, there's an app called Scan. I mean, you know, Google is not known for really creative names. So it's just called Scan. And you can hit the everything button, type scan, and you will find it. And sure enough, it saw my scanner and let me scan forms. It used the form feeder. It was great. Now, the other thing is, and this, we've talked about this one before, is Cursive, which is an app that lets stylus-enabled Chromebooks create handwritten notes. I think it was only available for a specific HP model at first, then it became available for everything. And so if you have a stylus and enabled Chromebook, go ahead and try it. I will say that the experience is not good, at least on the Duet 5 with the Lenovo, you know, stylus. Designed for Lenovo Chromebooks, I found, for example, you had to lift your hand very dramatically off of the screen. Otherwise, lines would just. I guess it's because it thinks you're handwriting, and I am not a handwriting person. I print letters because my handwriting's more illegible than my printed letters, which is also illegible, but less so. So, not so impressed by Cursive. I may give it another try to see what it's like. And last and least. The app I thought was going to be the most interesting turned out not to be so. It's called Screencast. And it lets you do pretty much your thing. It lets you create a screencast using your Chromebook. So it records your talking head using their front-facing camera so people can see you mm-hmm. speaking, records your voice, and records your screen in various ways, either an entire display or part of it. And I thought, and you could, like, you could annotate the screen to circle something and on the screen to emphasize it. And I thought, oh, this is great. And so I recorded something to share with you, John. And it took, I don't know, half an hour to process because I think it it does it all in the cloud, right? So it takes forever and ever and ever for it to process like a one-minute screencast I created. And when I was done, I looked at it in my Chromebook. Oh, this is not bad. I can see how I could use this. Then I tried to share it with you. And if you and mm-hmm. you can go ahead and click on the link. It'll tell you you need a Chromebook to see it. So it's very limited in its usefulness. I guess
another way that you're trying to get me to buy a Chromebook. You're sharing content with me that can only be viewed on a Chromebook.
So
very crafty.
So I guess the use case is educational, you know, K-12 market where you've got a controlled computing environment, an entire classroom with Chromebooks, and the teacher records a lesson or part of a lesson on a Chromebook, and you know everybody's got one so they can play it back at home and so forth. Mm-hmm. But I guess if that's your use case, then it's really useful if everybody has a Chromebook. Otherwise, it's too bad. It's a good idea. I hope they enhance it so that it becomes a truly shareable thing. Anyway, that's I've really found that Chromebooks have always been useful. How long have I had them now? When did I buy the first? I think I bought the first one just before the pandemic, so 2019 maybe I bought my first Chromebook. So it's been, you know, 19, almost 4 years, and it's been a really good experience. You know, I've bought 5 of them, so I obviously like them. I have to remember to take my Windows PC, which I also bought I bought a Windows HP laptop in 2019, just because. Mm-hmm. And I think I bring it out once every 60 days to make sure the battery's not dead and update Windows and stuff like that, which I should probably do today. But it doesn't get much use at all. So if you've got a Chromebook, go take a closer look with OS 105. A lot of interesting new features, little built-in apps that weren't there before, some built-in apps I'd never noticed before, and I think you'll enjoy it.
I think it is very interesting, though, because this kind of fits into the topic that I thought to talk about today, where you're mentioning upgrading something you use for personal use, sort mm-hmm. of when you see a compelling upgrade, when it looks like it might be an interesting new feature, a new design,
right.
But yet, so often we end up with these things that we use for quote-unquote work.
Right.
Like a Windows PC where we think, well, I got to have one of those sitting around just in case I need it. And we don't really think about what our benchmark is for upgrading those things.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, for large purchase items, which, you know, PCs are generally considered a large purchase for Mac, I know people who never upgrade their PCs. You know, mm-hmm. I remember when Windows maybe 7 came out, somebody was still running... wasn't even XP. I think that person is running Windows 98.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and so the topic that I was thinking about, especially with all of the Apple products that were announced a few weeks ago at the Buy Our Stuff or Else event, they're starting to make it out into the wild. People are posting their real-world thoughts on them. You know, how gigantic is the Apple Watch Ultra? How much of an upgrade is the 14 over the 13, 12, et cetera?
Right.
And so as enthusiasts, we often think about, well, I'm going to upgrade because I want to have fun with this. I want to have the
yes.
latest and greatest. But if we use our products for work, so I do this. I don't like to use any of the stuff that my university issues me just because it's typically not as good as the stuff I would buy for myself. And I view this as a tool that I use to do my job. So I want the best tool I can. But even then, I find myself on a 2018 iPad Pro right now as my primary iPad.
Yeah.
And it's now has the longest tenure of any current Apple product. I saw that just a couple of days ago, that it's been on sale and hasn't had a refresh, and everyone's pretty much assuming it will get a refresh in October.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, because I do plan on upgrading, what I will notice. So the last time I upgraded my iPad Pro, Yeah. I was shocked by how crisp the screen was and how much easier it was to read and the responsiveness of the Apple Pencil and all of these things. The keyboard was a better keyboard, even though it was still kind of a Apple keyboard that has its own fault set in right. a sense, but it was still better than the one that the previous generation had had. So how do you know with a device that you are daily driving and has become so part of your regular life that it's time to upgrade? You've already decided, I'm going to make this thing work. I'm going to figure out ways to keep it going. But then when you upgrade, you have this kind of shock of, why didn't I do this sooner? So what right. is your criteria for upgrading a daily driver?
Boy, that's a good question. You know, some of it is age, in a sense of a regular cycle I've adopted for certain devices. So Android mm-hmm. devices usually get upgraded every 3 years, you know, three cycles. Mm-hmm. Apple iPhones, I've been on a 2 year cycle. So every other one that like Star Trek, I get even numbered devices. Mm-hmm. Apple Watch looks like it's about a 3 year cycle. I never bought the first one. I had a Series 3 and now I have a Series 6 and we're currently on an 8. So maybe next year.
Mm-hmm.
And iPads iPad mini is whenever they come out because they never come out every year.
Yeah, that one you have to grab it when it's hot. You know,
yeah, I mean, I think there was a 4 year gap between 4 and 5, for example.
We were convinced it was getting killed off.
Yeah,
we were,
exactly.
I think, both very shocked when the iPad Mini 6 was announced and released.
Yeah, yeah. And for iPads are really a strange duck. You know, I once bought 2 iPads in 1 year because mm-hmm. I bought my first iPad Pro in 2016 when I didn't. When I was not doing my daily doodle project. And so I thought, I just need, you know, kind of a consumption device. I'll watch Netflix and browse the web, you know, that kind of thing. But once it became a, I don't know if you call it doodles creative, but let's call it a creative tool. We actually create, you know, storing stuff on mm-hmm. a regular basis. 32 gigs? That was a terrible idea. So I bought a new iPad the very next year in 2017 after I started doodling in January 1, 2017. I said, I need at least 256 gigs of storage. But after that, let's see. I think I'm on an every 2 year cycle now for iPad Pro, which I'm going to slow down because I'm using it less for doodling. I've gone back to paper and pencil. Or paper and pen, depending on my mood for the day. So it's not as important as it used to be. Although I will say I'm going to upgrade this because my 2020 iPad Pro, 11-inch model, has a green line that appears every so often. It's a soft line. It's not a dead pixels or anything. Apple replaced it once. They refused to replace it, even though I have two replacement policy warranty. So I was pretty annoyed by Apple on that, not honoring their warranty the second time for, you know, their second replacement. But I think I'm going to get a new iPad Pro this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be my last one for a while.
I used to do a cycle. I remember for a long time, Windows PCs was on a 2 year cycle for me, mm-hmm. you know, new laptop every 2 years. Of course, that was when they, you know, after 2 years, it was either a new version of Windows or a major service yes. pack. And this is the era I'm talking about now is 2001 to basically 2012, somewhere around there. It was
which are pretty exciting time for Windows, actually.
Yeah, things were getting smaller, things were getting better, new features, all of that. Then I switched to a MacBook, and I had a MacBook in 2009. I bought a MacBook Air in 2011 and a MacBook Pro in 2015. And as I gradually let that start getting longer and longer, I realized there's really not as much of an incentive. And now I'm on about, if I have a cycle with MacBooks, it's about every 5 years
mm-hmm.
that I upgrade my MacBook. But it's really, I found that the cycle mentality doesn't work as well for me anymore because, in general, there's not a sufficient case that it's going to really affect my productivity. It's not that things are broken on the device right. after 3 or 4 years of use.
Right.
You're right. iPads are a strange duck. In that I think that's the product category more so than even smartphones or laptops. I think tablets are still, we're still figuring out what a tablet does.
Yes.
And how best to design a tablet.
And what it is.
They started out as big smartphones. They have now morphed into laptop replacements. In some cases, maybe desktop replacements. So I think we're still figuring out that space.
Yeah, that said, you know, the other reason I want to, I'm planning to upgrade, you know, unless it's astronomically expensive, more expensive than last time, is that I skipped the last iPad upgrade, which was the M1, iPad Pro, and the new iPad OS. I wish it would go back to just iOS for everything. The new iPad OS 16 has some features that only works on M1 or M2 chip, and I don't have an M1 or M2. So, especially the overlapping windows, speaking of using iPads as a desktop. So I'm really looking forward to getting a new M-based iPad, M2 probably. You know, we're waiting to see if Apple will have an October event, which everybody seems to think will happen. And I think it will be a qualitative difference for iPad OS 16 users if you have an M-based iPad Pro versus the ARM-based ones that we have now.
Yeah, I suspect you are right on that. So that is also why I am really thinking I'll probably upgrade as well. That plus I want a better Magic keyboard or a better keyboard than what I've got now.
Hey, is your is your pencil first generation or second? No, 2018.
Second.
Okay. Okay. So you've got the same Apple pencil.
That there might be a third generation Apple pencil.
I have read
If that's the case, I would like that because then my second gen can get permanently kind of docked to my iPad mini.
Yes.
And I can get a new first gen for the iPad Pro. So,
yes.
Or a new third gen.
In fact, I like the Apple Pencil so much, Apple Pencil 2, didn't like the Apple Pencil 1 as much, that I bought two of them. I bought a second Apple Pencil 2 just for my iPad mini, which I do not use as much as I thought I was going to, interestingly enough, which surprised me.
Yeah, I had mine. So this is, again, your weird use scenarios. You know, my iPad Pro is much more of my daily driver at work, and my iPad mini is my home device for consumption and reading and those sorts of things. Right. And over the summer, when I was not at my office as much, the iPad mini had the Apple Pencil on it pretty much 100% of the time. The iPad Pro did not. And now it's swept. The Apple Pencil is sitting on the iPad Pro 95% of the time, and very rarely is docked to the mini. So, yeah, I guess it all depends on what your mindset is on a regular basis, where those Apple pencils are most useful to you.
Yeah, you know, the other. So I'm reading a Forbes article now about some you know, somebody looked at the Apple patent for what appears to be a new pencil, and I think the only new thing I can find is that, at least in a Forbes article, is that the Apple Pencil 3, or whatever they call it, it might have haptic feedback, which is sort of interesting. I'm not sure what the use case is for me, but I always, you know, like you said, as an enthusiast, I always find new features interesting, and we will see if it is as useful as it might be. You know, some things I also thought were interesting that never really happened was the Apple's AR capabilities, augmented reality, which I got real excited about for the iPhone, and I never used it after playing with it on a couple of apps.
There's still rumors that next year is going to be the year of Apple's AR, VR, whatever R headset.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because we're now 10 years away from Google Glass and the failure that Google Glass was.
Yes.
So maybe Apple has figured this thing out after 10 years. They certainly have put enough R&D into it when you look at how much they supposedly have spent and how big their teams are. Yeah. So we'll see what happens with that.
Did you ever buy an Oculus, either pre or post Facebook purchase? I have not.
No, I have not. Until there's a VR that can also do AR, I really don't know if I want to try to jump into that space. I have friends that have jumped into the VR space.
Yeah.
They enjoy it. I just don't know how much I would enjoy it. I've tried it at various times, and it's never convinced me that it's time to jump in.
Yeah.
But AR, I really like the idea of, you know, I'm waiting for the day when I have a pair of contact lens that have AR built in where it will project, you know, someone comes up to me, their name shows up under their face, and, you know, the last interactions I've had with them pop up, and I can say, oh, yeah, that email that I sent you last week where I said blah, 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 you know, and I've got exactly what was said because it's literally under their face. And, yeah, I want those sorts of interactions more so than I want to pretend that I'm standing on the edge of a building or something like that at the roof. You know, that's not as compelling to me.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I'm reading while you were talking. I pulled up some more rumors about the alleged Apple Pencil 3. And one rumor is it's going to have a small display on it. That'll be kind of like the touch bar, which we were talking about before we started the podcast. So maybe a little display, maybe haptic feedback, something Apple can actually detect orientation in hands, detecting motion. Oh, you could use it as an air pen.
Huh. That would be interesting.
Huh. And combine it with VR. That would be interesting. These are all rumors, right? There's no, these people are not citing sources, except for the patent one about the haptic feedback. But I don't think a date has been announced for the new, the upcoming, alleged upcoming Apple event. So, and October's coming up close. It's coming up fast.
So we will have to keep an eye out for it. Although the iPad announcements, they always don't seem to be announced too far in advance. Might be 2 weeks or so when an iPad announcement comes out. And they're less regular than the Apple events in September. So sometimes I think they have slipped in the past to November versus October. So we'll keep our eyes open. But I do think you and I are both on the verge of iPad upgrade.
Definitely.
I definitely think I am, since I did not upgrade at all anything this month, and I was pretty sure I was going to.
Yeah.
So, but
I thought you were going to get the new watch.
I had thought about it.
Yeah.
But there was not. I'm on a Series 6 as well as you.
Yeah.
And there just wasn't as compelling to go from a 6 to an 8.
And definitely not the Ultra.
Although, I deal with Ultra envy in some cases. But I just don't. I wouldn't daily wear it.
Yeah,
I would wear it here and there, maybe weekends. But ultimately, I like a daily wear. So maybe next year. My hope is that the Apple Watch Series 9 will incorporate the action button from the Ultra and will have the stainless steel that I've always had, and will incorporate some of those more fancy sensors that I think were on the slate originally for 2022 and got pushed off to 2023 or 24. So,
yeah, I think that this is kind of very narrow band of interest for people that are blood sugar indicator and temperature. Does it do temperature? I don't think so. Oh, it does, but not in the way we want it to. I think it's just a baseline temperature. Yeah, relative temperature. So, but if it has some of the health things, that would be much more interesting, more than it has now. But by the way, speaking of health, I'm going to go back, remind me to go back to why I bought a MacBook Air M1. But speaking of health things, I don't know if you've noticed on your Apple Watch health, there are two interesting metrics that I never knew were there, and I just noticed them like maybe a month or two ago, and that is stair speed down and stair speed up.
Mm-hmm. They've been there for about a year and a half.
And I just noticed it, and I can't figure out why some days my stair speed up is higher than or faster than stair speed down. Other days it's not, and I don't. And it's not like I'm falling down the it's not like I'm falling down the stairs on the days where my down speeds are faster than my up speeds. But in general, and I wish it had a comparative graph of up versus down, I think in general my up speed is faster than my down. I can't figure out why. In fact, I'm looking at it right now. So my down speed is fairly consistent. It's between 0.98 and 1 feet per second. So it's pretty much 1 foot per second every single day for, most of the time. Mm-hmm. But my up speed, and I'm looking for the last week, varies widely from 0.77 feet per second to 1.3 feet per second, which he's, you know, quite a bit faster than 1 foot per second down speed, which is fairly consistent. But and it's not like I run upstairs, you know. So anyway, curious
about
that.
Well, I mean, I guess I could ask it this way. Does anyone ever chase you? I mean, the way I kind of think of that is if you're walking up or down in groups.
Yeah.
Because I do this fairly often where I hit the same stairs every day. And sometimes I've got people with me, and other times I am alone. So I could see, I'm looking at mine, and my stair speed down is 1.1 foot per second, but it varies wildly. If I go in the last month from 0.68 to 1.8, and that's my stair speed down, my stair speed up has another wild change between 0.7 and 1.1.
Okay.
I have one outlier in there.
So there is variation.
But I could see it being if you're walking with others versus walking alone. Plus, as I always like to remind people, walking downstairs is not so much walking downstairs as it is controlled falling.
Exactly.
So
good point.
Maybe you do see some variation in that, depending on.
To answer your question, I almost never walk up or down the stairs with other people. I'm almost always by myself. You know, 99% of the time, I'm in my home, whose stairway is really too narrow for one person to go up and down at a time, or I'm in a parking structure, which is, you know, of course, wide enough for more than one person, but it's generally just me going up and down. So, or even at work, you know, I usually just, you know, faster than taking an elevator sometimes to just go up into the stairs, but, anyway, I want to get back to upgrading my Mac. So I did upgrade my MacBook. Well, I don't know if upgrade is the right word. So I bought a MacBook Pro in 2019, the one I'm using right now. So let's see, 20, 21, 22, it's almost 3 years old. And in 2020, I think this is when M1 first came out. I bought or 2021, whenever it came out, I bought the first M1 based MacBook Air, which is great. And I bought it specifically because I was curious about how useful it would be to be able to run some iOS apps on my MacBook, which you can do with an M1 based device. And the answer is, like running Android on my Chromebooks, I almost never do it. So the answer is it's an interesting curiosity. And, you know, for an enthusiast, it's kind of fun for the first week and then you never use it again.
Yeah,
but what has been more important, and as I'm touching my MacBook Pro right now, it's pretty warm. I don't have a thermometer nearby to check the temperature, but it's pretty warm. It's not hot to the touch, but it's warm to the touch. The M1 based MacBook Air almost never gets warm. It is wild. It is shunting heat to an alternate universe, just like the iPad, which doesn't get hot for me. But that's why I upgraded to M1. I have the M1 is so fast. And because M1 binaries or universal binaries are now available for many apps that I use on the Mac, that I have no reason to buy an M2. You know, I'm not a serious photographer or video editor or anything like that. Or, you know, even audio. On my 2019 MacBook Pro, the audio for these podcasts are plenty fast in terms of compressing and all that kind of stuff. So, and I have no intention to ever buy another Windows device again.
I have very little thought that I will end up on a Windows device in the future, but I would never say never on that.
Yeah, I agree.
My dream, sort of, I don't know, maybe this is my inner geek saying, let me do this. I would like a very good, compelling Linux-based solution for everything that I use Apple for right now. I would be really interested in a Linux-based ultra hackable smartwatch, a Linux based, probably Android phone. I'm sure I could find a very good Android phone that I would like, and without the Google overlords, just base Android, and a Android tablet, an Android desktop or laptop, or a Linux based desktop or laptop. But that is sort of like me saying that I'd like to go off and live in a shack in the woods and be off the grid. In theory, it sounds rustic and romantic, but in practice, it would probably annoy me quite a bit. So. Yeah.
By the way, if you're going to get an Android phone, Pixel is the way to go because it is the least adorned device. You know, it's got no funky UI hacks from, you know, Samsung and no weird third-party apps. It's just googly. So I would, having bought Pixels since the original, what was it called? Something before the Pixel, whatever.
Well, there was the Nexus line.
Nexus, right. I've since the first Nexus, I've been all Google. Have not bought any branded, you know, aside from Google device. And yes, I know somebody makes this not Google, but, you know, it does have the Google label on it. So I really recommend it.
I would just like an Android or a Linux-based smartwatch. I think that would be really cool, but we'll have to see. Wear OS needs to come a little bit further, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. And Wear OS is like a different animal anyway, so it's not really Linux. Or maybe it is at like kernel level, but probably stops there. You might like a Chromebook, just if you just want to try to use Linux in general, because you know you can run Linux on a Chromebook. It comes built-in option to turn that on, and it creates a container system for you. So,
It's tempting. Yeah. I keep having this battle that I fight that I've talked about in the past on the podcast of carrying things versus not carrying things.
Yep.
So the idea that I would leave one of my devices at work, so I wouldn't mm-hmm. have to carry it back and forth, and mm-hmm. have an iPad at work, and you know, just walk into my office with nothing except my wallet and keys. But then I end up carrying my laptop and saying I like the idea that I've always got it with me, and
yeah.
who knows? I go back and forth. I'm a horrible person when it comes to committing to these workflows.
I have stopped carrying laptops around. I stopped that years ago after the iPads became reasonably functional. And I know that during the pandemic, I actually had to run around when we weren't supposed to be, for pandemic purposes, I should note, work purposes. And I carried around an iPad mini 5 or 4, I guess, 5 at the time, with a Bluetooth keyboard, a very, very, very short Bluetooth keyboard, no numeric keypad, that, you know, fit in a small bag. And it was great. Oh, and a MiFi, because I don't have a LTE-based mm-hmm. system. But I don't even know if iPad minis have LTE. But at any rate, it was a great combo, a MiFi and a iPad mini and a Bluetooth keyboard. I got everything done that way, all my email and, you know, signing forms and all of that. I was able to do all of that electronically via my iPad. So it was a very good experience. I would recommend it. But yeah, like you, I carry less and less over the years, you know, although maybe I carry more and more, I just don't notice it, you know, like I actually always have three devices, right? I have a four, if you count my Fitbit. I have an Apple mm-hmm. Watch, I have an Apple phone, and I have at least, you know, an Apple mini, iPad mini. So I'm carrying three Apple devices around me at all times, despite
saying
cut down.
Well, and I'm carrying a giant backpack now, because as I mentioned, I have a Linus Tech Tips backpack.
That was a nice backpack.
It's big. It carries everything I'd ever need to do. Most days it's maybe 10% full.
Yeah.
But it's light enough that I don't care that it's 10% full. So I guess that's the nice compromise with it. But I do tend to notice now that I have to give myself wider leeway walking through doors, because otherwise I hit my backpack on things. But it's a big boxy backpack, but you know, light enough that I don't care, and it's on my back, so it's not like
I
can see it.
Yeah, don't walk into a glass shop. You're going to scare people with that thing on your back.
I really would. Yeah, I would not do that. I would put it, I would hold it or something.
Yeah, I hear you. I have actually had to do that while traveling and, you know, doing touristy kind of things. And I've got this giant backpack on. I'm going to someplace with some fragile looking things. I better carry this near the floor. I'm scaring to death the owner of the store, or the manager, whoever it is. But anyway, getting back to when to upgrade, it's some things it's never, like Windows 11, never going to use it. Well, like you said, never say never, but unlikely I will use it, since nothing I have can upgrade to it. And it has no features that interest me. That you know, I need, so that will be a low probability. We won't say never. Lower probability than everything else. iPad Pro. As soon as they announce it, I'm going to buy one.
Mm-hmm.
Chromebooks. I just bought, like I said, the Duet 5 just a month ago. It was Prime Day. Yeah, I also got that on Prime Day. So the one thing I have been buying and it's not an upgrade, just different ones. Bluetooth headsets. It's weird. It's not like I'm collecting them. It's just I've been trying to find the balance between Bluetooth headsets that I can wear without falling out. Like right now, I'm wearing my AirPods Pro, which I can't walk more than 3 feet without them falling out. And I bought a couple of one. Sterling Yee, who was a guest while you were on a super secret mission, told me about these, I think it's $40 or $45 Skullcandy Bluetooth earbuds at Costco. And so I bought a pair of those, and those actually stay in my ear the best compared to anything. And that's compared to the AirPods Pro, compared to the Amazon Echo Buds, which are better than the AirPods Pro in terms of ear stickiness. But these things really, without having any loop or anything, are really good. They really stay in the ear. Has it fallen? Yeah, it's fallen out once. But, you know, AirPods, like I said, I can't take three steps without it falling out. And yes, I have adjusted the little silicone earpieces, and I just can't get none of the three fit. Anywho, I thought this was going to be a 20-minute podcast, John. We are now at...
Well, we're just good at what we do.
In any case, hopefully we'll have some word on the next Apple event, if there is such a thing. I don't know if there's a Google event, but we'll call some of our friends to chat with us if there are either one of those. And that is it for this podcast, number 423, and we'll talk to you next time.